This season of the WNBA has gone to new heights.
And that means the playoffs are going to be hotter than ever.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson.
And all WNBA season long, we've brought you analysis and interviews with some of your favorite court queens.
So for the finals, you know we're bringing takes you can only find in this courtroom.
Listen to and follow Queens of the Court, a WNBA podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Willard and Dibs.
So what was on the menu? Seven steaks? Two whole chickens?
I went and got a giant Wagyu steak for him.
So I'm ecstatic about that.
On 95.7 The Game.
We're getting close.
Yeah?
And we're going to need you to, put your pants on and get ready here. All right?
My pants have been on, and I'm always ready.
But pull them up and buckle up.
If you're trying to get ready, then you're not going to be ready. You got to stay ready.
Okay.
I've been ready.
You're ready?
I've been ready.
You're ready right now?
I've been ready for a long time.
All right, fine. Then let's fade the Dibbers. Let's go.
It's time for
Fade the Dibbers.
Please explain.
Nostra Diblis gives out his pick. You bet against it. You make money.
Cash me out one time.
It's that simple.
Hey, Dibs, your pick stinks.
Dibs, what's the lock of the day?
Here we go. It's a division matchup on a Thursday night in Hotlanta. The Falcons are hosting Dibs boy, Baker Mayfield, and the Bucks. Both of them have been a little up and down so far this year, but the number is 2.5. The Falcons are the favorite. What say you, Dibs? Everybody get your apps ready to go the other way.
Yeah, I like when people do that. I'm coming off a little bit of a heater, although I'm being told in my ear that
you're really not.
I lost on Monday.
Yeah, you're 0-1.
Actually, I split.
You're 0-1 in your last one.
Monday was a split.
It was, but the last game was
the last game was a win.
Oh, that was a win. You're right.
Yeah, button it up over there, Willie.
You're right. Yeah, you're hot. You're 1-0 in your last one.
7-6 on the year, about to get to 8-6, and I like Atlanta a lot, but I got a little thing for Baker Mayfield. Ever since you disrespected him last year, he's been clowning you ever since. I like this Tampa offense.
I picked him up on my fantasy team. That's how much I clowned him.
I like the Tampa offense, and you give me points, even though it's on the road. These divisional matchups, they're always tough to call. I like Tampa and the 2.5 at Atlanta. Go ahead and lock that up, Ken.
Cuckoo.
I said cuckoo.
Yeah, he hit it.
Played
it
softly.
I know.
Because, turn that ass up.
No, because we're all distracted by the fact that last place Luke, the director of sports here at 95.7 The Game, he started a celebration sensation when you go the way he wants you to go. And you did. So in other words, he thinks Atlanta.
Yes, but he doesn't bet anymore because
I kind of lean in his direction too. I think this is just,
it's a field goal game.
No, my two cents is this is a stay away. This is not.
I don't have that option.
I know you don't. So, but I'm just putting my two cents in.
Bunch of cowards.
No, it's a stay away game.
I think the line is weird. That's why I like Atlanta. My buddy has a free bet and he asked who to bet on.
Okay. What do you mean by the line is weird?
Well, they're a 2.5-point favorite against the Bucks, who have been rolling as of late. I would think that it would be more in their favor, but the fact that Atlanta's, I know they're at home, but
yeah.
The fact that they're 2.5 is a bigger line than I would have expected.
Can we redefine I'm hot or they've been rolling? What does that mean? The Bucks won last week. The week before that, they might have had one of the most embarrassing losses and performances that any NFL team has had all year long. To let Bo Nix, who can't get a first down, come into your place and move up and down the field at will made no sense.
Atlanta?
Tampa.
Oh, yeah.
What the hell was that against Denver 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
That was a week and a half ago. So, no, they're not rolling.
Well,
they look okay.
What have you done for me lately? Yeah. Baker looked great. Best quarterback in the league, probably.
Who'd they play last week? Who'd they
Eagles.
Beat? Oh, God. Yeah, the Eagles. The Eagles stink. The
Eagles don't have a pass catcher you've heard of besides Dallas
Goddard. Yeah, they're running around with Paris Campbell.
Dallas Goddard, my guy.
Yeah. They, no.
Remember Jahan Dotson?
I do remember Jahan Dotson. I remember for 2 years in a row, and everybody's like, "That's you get him in the 10th round, you'll win your league."
He's an Eagle now. Wouldn't know it by last weekend.
He's a league winner. Yeah, no, he's not. He got traded. He got dumped by the most upstart team in the NFC.
And they're doing great.
They're doing great. Yeah.
This one is a tough one. And it's honestly, very tough. It would be a stay away if I was allowed to, but the two teams are very, very closely matched. And this one feels like a field goal game either way, which would tell you that you should probably take the favorite, the home favorite, to win by three. And they're only given 2.5. But I like Tampa in this one. I'm going to take Tampa and hope for a close loss or a narrow victory.
Yeah, like I get it. But let's also do the metrics on the Falcons. You're like, oh, they're 2-2. They are literally a hot breath away from being 0-4. They had no business, as we all well know.
Beating the Saints.
Well documented. No, the Eagle game. Remember? 99.7% chance to lose.
Oh, that's right.
With 2 minutes to go.
And your guy Saquon
and
dropped
Sirianni
the pass.
Sirianni and Saquon Barkley put an alliance together on how to lose a football game in 10 days. And the Falcons went right down the field and won the game by one. And their other victory is a 58-yard buzzer-beating field goal last week against the Saints.
Yeah, Younghoe Koo.
They are two crazy plays away from being 0-4. 0-4.
No doubt.
But also competitive in all of their games. Hung right with the Chiefs. Hung right with the Steelers. One-score games. They seem to be playing only home games this year. Like that game in Philly is the only time they've left Atlanta all year. You're right. I don't know really what to think of either of these teams yet. Which means, yeah, it's a stay-away game.
Yeah.
I don't know what the hell's going to happen in this one.
Just remembering from last weekend when they got the 58-yard field goal, they got a 30-yard PI that preceded that, that set up the field goal.
Great point.
Which was, hey, it might have been PI, but it was one of those just chuck and duck plays where you're hoping for a flag and you get it.
Some corner made a stupid grab, and the next thing you know, you lose a football game. It's kind of crazy. Like,
But that's been the year, I think, in totally. A nutshell. A lot of these games have been on a razor's edge.
You're going to have a competitive game tonight.
Should be.
Nobody's running away from anybody in this one, which would lean in your direction, but 2.5, that's funky because...
Right.
Yeah, you like field goal, Younghoe Koo from 60. Oh, yeah. Lost my bet.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If you think it's going to be a field goal game, then you would take the favorite at home and lay the 2.5. But I didn't. And, I make my picks in my confidence pool usually on Wednesday, and I've decided to stick with it. So the Niner pick, that pick is in. And the Monday pick, that pick's already in as well. Okay. I'll hold those for the appropriate time.
And you're allowed to change them for Fade the Dibbers.
I have, and I've been right, and I have, and I've also been wrong doing that. So I'm just going to try to stick to my guns.
All right, so there it is. So listen.
Tampa and the 2.5.
I hope you listen closely. We're all asking for you to unload your 529 accounts on the Atlanta Falcons tonight.
Nice.
-2.5.
Fade the Dibber.
All right.
You like that?
I love it. I love it. I can't wait to watch this game. GPD's on the phone. Hi, Grandpa Daddy. What's up?
Oh, man. I love you guys, man. You make my day. You make me smile, and I appreciate that, man. Thank you very much for your service.
We feel the same way about your phone calls, GPD.
Well, I just want to say, Mark, I love you being a San Francisco homer. Dibs,
thank you.
You're pragmatic. Dibs, you're pragmatic. You're Steiny. You know, I guess you're not a 49er fan, right? You must not be a 49er fan, but we need your perspective because you keep us homers in check and keep us on an even keel. So that's what I love about you, Dibs.
I am a fan, but I'm not just going to swoon in denial of what I think is an actual opinion, GPD. I'm not like one of these sycophants, fanboy. I keep it real, GPD. I keep it a buck.
Keep it real.
Keep it all the way 100.
You know
it. Keep it 100, Dibs. That's what I love that about you. And I want to say this, but what you're keeping it 100 about. Mark,
Yeah.
You're wrong.
About?
When you come home, you're wrong. When you come home and the baby needs attention, you drop everything and you give your baby, when your grandpa, daddy, when your daddy, the kid needs you, you drop everything and you don't watch football, you don't do nothing.
Thank you, GPD.
No. I agree with you, GPD, but what you're doing here is you're misusing the word need. She don't need attention. She wants attention. And if you give her too much of that, no, it's not.
Well,
no, it's not.
That's true. Hold on. You're right. You raise some kids. You're right. There's needs and there's wants. It's a balance.
That's exactly right. By the way, GPD, I use that in parenting all the time. Because you know how many times I've had a kid on Amazon.com, Dad, I need this.
I go, stop.
You don't need this. You want this. And we can have a conversation about that, but don't come at me with you need this. You got clothes on your butt. You got food on your plate. You got a bed to sleep in. You don't need this.
You got a roof over your head.
That's right.
You're dealing with this. Teenagers, not toddlers. It's different.
I'm dealing with everything.
Hold it.
Look,
I was getting ready to say that. But when you're in that baby to 5-year-old range, it's always they need you.
Exactly.
They need you, bro.
Yeah, thank you, GPD. She doesn't know the difference between need and want.
Thank you, GPD.
And if she comes up to me midway through the third quarter, and it's 3rd and 4, and it's have it milky, it's either I go and get the milky, or I spend the next 5 minutes with have it milky.
Where's your partner?
My partner is
probably
at the grocery store, or probably doing one of the other myriad things that she does to keep the household running. It's a shared load.
3 hours a week.
Bro, it's just not that simple.
I've got three. I get it. The Niners played when they were 2 years old, too. I remember.
Yeah, you can just,
you know what she needs? She needs to sit down and learn about 49er football.
Oh, we actually
Let's
do.
Let's go.
She gets a lot of lap time.
How many years until she's got a fantasy team?
Probably 4. Ooh, she's 6. I'll get her own little fantasy team.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Jude's 10. He's been in leagues for 13 years already. Okay? come on. Let's
Straight
go.
Out the
womb. Chop. That's what you need. You need to be learning. That's what you need. Sit down.
Yeah.
Watch how you watch a football game, freak out and sweat over other people doing things you got no control over. Let's do this.
Give you a real reason to cry. When you got Rashid Shaheed in your lineup and he gets no targets.
That's right. Exactly.
And then you bench him the next week and he goes for 13 points in the fantasy. I can't get that guy right. I play him,
Rashid
gets a zero, bench him, and he goes off.
Yeah, but goes off. He's a did he catch a bomb for a touchdown or not guy.
Right.
So that's going to be like that every week.
But when he does,
let me tell you why.
He's on your bench, it drives you crazy.
Yeah, well, that's spoiler alert, you're going to get driven crazy when you play fantasy football.
But when you have a guy like another guy I have, Garrett Wilson, he frustrates you for different reasons because it's clear that offensively, they're not interested in moving the ball or scoring points. So, but he's a really good receiver. So
he was.
I know. I mean, when do you get to the point where you start benching Garrett Wilson?
I mean,
and then he has a breakout game.
Be ready.
We're getting there.
Bench your. No matter if you picked him early or not, it's not like you're paying him. You've been putting in investment. Let's go.
But he's the kind of guy who can get, he can go, 9 catches for $130 and 2 touchdowns in a heartbeat. He's that good.
No, I get it.
The whole thing is just drives you crazy.
Listen, I drafted Michael Pittman in the 5th round. He's on the bench. You sit down. Deontay Johnson taking your spot, young man. We got competition in this team. And if you lose, you out. You sit. You watch this fantasy game from the bench. That was the stupid we sound.
Yep.
Anyway, you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, and Odyssey Sports Station. Always live on the free Odyssey app, Twitch and YouTube, powered by First NorCal Credit Union. For a low-rate auto loan, apply online, or just ask for First NorCal financing at the dealer. All right, can we change the tone a little bit about Brandon Ayuk? Because this is where my head went today. And speaking of parenting, I find parenting to be this. It is the yin and the yang constantly of discipline and compassion. Back forth. I mean, even think about what you're talking about. My comes over. Milky. All right. Well, like, you're both needing to serve the compassion of a two-year-old that wants milk, but also you are on the daily chipping away at helping her understand how you go about asking for things in life. Because in 5 years, if she's coming up to you still during the Niner game, Daddy, Milky, you bad dad. Okay?
No, I get so, it. And right? Today was... Have it milky, and so I go in the... Of course, honey, good morning.
I love that have it comes first. That is my favorite.
Have it milky. Have it milky. Mama, have it. Okay, honey, okay.
Mama, have it.
So then you go in the fridge, and
you look at her and go, Mama, you don't have it.
And then she's learning how to open the fridge. So you go in there, and you get her the milky, and then she looks at it, and she goes, want big cup. And then she takes the milk, and she throws it across the kitchen. And I say, Mila, we don't do that. We don't throw the milk across the kitchen. You don't get the big cup. So now we're going to get upset because have it big cup. And I thought you wanted milky.
There
I
you
gave
go.
You milky. Now we want the big cup. Now we've got a problem.
All right. So twice this week, you've compared Brandon Ayuk to a two-year-old. I don't want to come off as, dismissive of Brandon in such
I
a
love
way.
Brandon.
He's a grown
and I love
man.
My daughter.
He's an adult. But here's what I'm getting at. There's no two ways about this. I have been very, very critical of Brandon Ayuk. I have been very hard on Brandon Ayuk. I stand by everything I've said and that I'm saying. But what if we took a little bit of a different angle as opposed to just like analyzing what's happened and sharing opinions on that? Why don't we ask it this way? What do you see when you're watching him? This whole experience, what do you think's going on? And maybe this is a little bit of amateur psychology, which maybe we shouldn't do. I don't know. I don't think anything serious is going on. But like every show on our station in one way, shape, or form has started to have this thought where like, and you especially, since you're over there charting punts on Monday mornings, like that's a deeper dive. What do you see? What's going on here? Because it's not that small of a sample anymore. And the performances are not there. And they were there consistently last year. And I don't want to hear that he missed camp. It's October, for goodness sakes. He has had plenty of time to get all of his snaps and look like himself. And it does not look the same. So, and you can all weigh in on this. 888-957-9570. We will take your calls throughout the 5 o'clock hour. What do you think is going on here?
I think it's a number of things. One, it's an offense right now that is not highlighting any one player, and we all had an expectation that he would be the dude. He got paid, and Debo missed a game, and Debo is coming back, and Brandon Ayuk is going to get a chance to cook. And we talked to TJ Houshmandzadeh, Brandon's personal coach, and he was saying, yeah, you pay a guy $30 million, he needs to get those targets. Well, I've looked at every game that he's played twice, and I'm seeing that Brandon Ayuk is getting a pretty good amount of targets. And if you want to look at his stats commensurate to last year, just from a target standpoint, he's almost on a similar pace. Hmm. He's had 25 targets in 4 games, which would mean for 17 games, he would be at about 105 targets.
Which is exactly what he had, right?
105 targets last year.
That's crazy.
So target-wise...
That's crazy!
Yeah. He's got 5, 10, 5, and 5 targets. 25 targets this year. So he's on pace for last year. 105 targets last year. 75 catches and 7 touchdowns.
So that says something to me right there. That number you just gave. He is actually on the same target pace. And the reason he looked like an elite receiver last year is because of the number you gave earlier, which is his success percentage, his
catch
success
percentage,
rate.
Yep.
His catch rate last year was fantastic.
71.4 last year.
And this year it's awful.
52%.
So same targets.
Right.
And significantly worse production.
Right. And you can say he has 2 drops. You can say he has 4 drops. It doesn't matter what the actual stat number is. I know that there have been 4 passes thrown to him that I think and you think that he should have caught.
Yep.
So 25 targets, 13 catches, 4 drops or 4 catchable balls that he didn't get. So now we're down to the other eight passes that have been thrown his way that he hasn't gotten. There have been a couple of pass breakups. There was the interception against New England that was targeted to him that was thrown into double coverage. And there have been four passes that I've seen where he and Brock just were not on the same page. Either the route he ran wasn't crisp enough, or Brock threw it to a spot where Brandon wasn't. Whatever the connection was, it wasn't there. So what I'm seeing watching the games twice is that he and Brock, first and foremost, they're not on the same page. They're not connecting like they did last year. Against New England, the first play, the first pass play that the Niners ran was a beautifully constructed Brandon route where he was wide open. That deep cross that he ran, and he got 35 yards or whatever. And I thought that was going to be foreshadowing what the game was going to look like. Like, let's target Brandon. Yeah. Let's feature Brandon. I'm not seeing him being featured as the primary in a lot of routes. So I think it's a lot of things. One, he's not the primary as often as I think that he would like. And when he is, he and Brock just aren't on the same page.
I got some thoughts on this, but let's go to Kirk first. Kirk in Los Altos on Willard and Dibs. Hey, Kirk, appreciate the phone call. What's going on?
This season of the WNBA has gone to new heights.
And that means the playoffs are going to be hotter than ever.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson.
And all WNBA season long, we've brought you analysis and interviews with some of your favorite court queens.
So for the finals, you know we're bringing takes you can only find in this courtroom.
Listen to and follow Queens of the Court, a WNBA podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you very much. About the whole Brendan thing, I would wonder, first of all, is how many people like myself walked past the television on Monday and saw the subline about Devonta Adams wanting a trade,
uh-huh,
and had the immediate thought, I've got a trade for you right now that'll work out perfectly for everybody. But my sense on, and I'm a complete amateurish at this sort of stuff, just watching it for so many years, is that last year, I think maybe it had been an outlier, that it all clicked last year, but there's no necessary guarantee that it's going to maybe ever happen again. And I think the whole team is in a funk on lots of other levels, you know, from the offensive line, if we can go over that. But I think my personal thought is that I don't know that he'll ever rise to that level again, even as young as he is. But that's my betting line. And thus, I would certainly, if Devonta Adams felt like coming home, I would take him in a heartbeat.
Well, Kirk, thank you for the call. Okay, put the Devonta thing over here because I got something for you, but okay, Let's hold that.
Yep.
As far as like last year being an outlier, I mean, look, last year I know was his best season, but it wasn't his first 1,000-yard season. I do think we're beyond the idea of whether or not Brandon is good. Like, my God, do we have these conversations too long? I hope you all know that if you're still having is Brock good conversations at your football parties stink. Okay, that's what's not good is your football parties. Like, that conversation's over, and I feel the same way about Brandon. Brandon is already a proven commodity in the NFL. He is a very good receiver. Can you expect what you've been talking about, that kind of success rate going forward? Probably not. Does it need to be that? Maybe not. Here's my concern. My concern, and I don't even know if this is necessarily directly tied to his numbers, but here's what I see in the offseason from Brandon. Watch the way two different people could translate the same thing. It's May, and the 49ers, who are known for this, are driving a hard bargain. They're offering you less money than you want. One person, say Nick Bosa, would go, oh, Niners are negotiating. Okay, fine. We'll wait this out. The next person will go, they say they don't want me.
Yep, yep.
Do you see how different that is? How Brandon took it personally. That right then and there was a concern, if you ask me, because now What does that mean when you take this to the field? Now you are a national story for 4 months. You sign your big deal. You get the number you wanted, but you're a national story. People are talking about you in a different way. The pressure's up. You go out on the field, and now for a month plus, your numbers are not what people want them to be, and the talk keeps going. If you're somebody who takes that kind of stuff personally, dude, that's going to take you down.
It is
going to take you down to less than what you can be. And so that's one thing that at minimum I think about when I watch Brandon Ayuk.
It's possible that that can be something that affects him going forward. And I'm just looking at the way he's played through 4 games, and I don't see a precipitous drop-off in his productivity. I know the catches are down, and he hasn't scored a touchdown, and his catch percentage and all the rest of it, yards per game, all the numbers, they're down, but it still is a small sample.
Totally.
And I see a guy who's playing, and I just looked at his snap count percentage, and I think he's at 81% of snaps. I'm sorry, 76%, which is slightly below where he was throughout his career. Part of that is that he missed camp, and so week 1 and week 2 was a ramp up. Now you don't have the ability to talk about a ramp up. Now you're in it, and now you're playing. And he played about 90% of the snaps last week, and he got 5 targets, and I'm sure he'd like to get more targets. And I would know that they want to get him more targets as well. But right now, as a team, you're not throwing it a ton, especially against New England, where you were up big in the second half, and so you didn't throw it a lot. So I don't want to just cast a sweeping judgment on Brandon based on his offseason off of just 4 games. Right now, the numbers don't look good. The impact doesn't look good. Red shorts at practice on a Friday doesn't look good. A catch percentage of 52%, that doesn't look good. He was at 71 last year, and I disagree with the caller that last year was an anomaly, because in 2022, he had more catches, 78. He had more touchdowns, 8. He didn't have as many yards, but the productivity was there. The catch percentage, the success rate, the touchdowns, all that have been consistent. This year is a slow start. Talk to me in 4 more games.
For sure.
If he still is at where he is right now, which is 3.3 catches a game, if we get 8 games in and he's got 25 catches for 350 yards and no touchdowns, now we can talk about
this.
I think coming onto the field.
Yeah, we've got a problem, because also look at the opponents you're talking about in the next 4 games. This whole thing ramps up in a massive way. You know, you got 4 games, and you're just like, all right, you played the Rams, and you know, you beat the New England Patriots. Well, the next 4 games are 2 division opponents. 2 of them are in prime time, with the Cowboy game and the Seahawks game, and you're playing the Dallas Cowboys and the Kansas City Chiefs in that window as well. You're going to have to be a better football team. You are going to be a much more watched football team. All of those things. This is a really fancy stretch for the Niners heading into the bye.
It's a good way to put
okay?
it. 3 home, 1 road, yes. 2 prime.
So, and
2 division.
1 Sunday night and a Dallas star and a Patrick Mahomes and all of that coming to town. So, and 3 of them at home. 3 of the 4 at home. So this is fancy. This is sparkly. And you're going to want your best foot forward, especially with your best players. Now, to the Devontae thing, which we discussed at length yesterday. And I am pro-Devontae to the 49ers. You are anti. But I think we had the conversation yesterday under the umbrella of, look, very probably not going to happen. I get it. Can I throw some credibility at the idea?
You can.
Let me try. Let me throw some credibility, which means I'm not quoting myself. That's not credible. Here's where I can throw some credibility at this. This was said this morning by Ian Rappaport. I am going to read this quote in full directly.
The sheet.
New York is where the Raiders star wants to play. After informing the Raiders on Monday, he prefers to be traded. But Adams has not demanded as much from Las Vegas. And this is not a scenario like Aaron Rodgers in 2023 when he informed the Packers he would only play for the Jets. In fact, according to sources, informed of Adams' thinking, he is open to playing for several other teams. The New Orleans Saints, the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Baltimore Ravens, the Buffalo Bills, the Dallas Cowboys, and perhaps the San Francisco 49ers are among the teams that either have inquired about Adams or are places Adams would be happy landing. Okay? That's a direct quote from who I believe is right up there as the most tapped in voices in the entire league.
So you listed eight teams where he would either be open to playing or teams that have inquired.
And
so a fourth of the league.
Yes. Understood. That's a big list. I get it. But you know that because of the contractual situation, it needs to be a place where Devontae would be happy going, and it would have to obviously be an interested team, which this is suggesting that at least the majority of these teams have called and inquired, and I actually believe the Dallas Cowboys are not one of those teams. That's off the table. They seem intent on only paying Dak and CD. I've heard that the Cowboys are a definite no. And this comes after, I do believe, there was some poking around with Devontae Adams from the 49ers in the offseason when Brandon Ayuk trade talks were active. So put all that together, and I still would phrase it as very unlikely, but not off the table.
Well, nothing's ever off the table, and you know they're allowed to make this trade, to use your parlance. I look at the situation with Devontae Adams, and Devontae Adams wants to be traded, and he has 2 years left in his deal, neither of which is guaranteed. So he's an easy cut at the end of the year, and if I'm Devontae Adams and I want to be traded, the first thing I'm going to ask my new team is, how about a new deal? Because he's 32, and I'm sure he wants to keep playing football, and so do the Niners want to acquire him and pay him, and you're back where you were, paying two wide receivers big money, and I know he's better than Brandon Ayuk, but you'd still be in that same situation of, if you traded for him, having to rework his deal. I would imagine that's what Devontae would want.
Yes.
If he is going to go to any team.
I think it's what any team would want. Like you've
talked
about this.
You don't want to just have him for half a year.
Well, and the salary just balloons. It balloons to above Justin Jefferson next year. No one's paying that. So it would have to be restructured. And remember, Devontae's carrot at the end of the stick here is not the contract. I think it's the stats and the chance to win. This guy's got Gardner Minshew throwing to him.
Right.
Look at the list that he just put together. Who are the QBs? The QBs are...
You got Josh Allen.
Aaron Rodgers. Derek Carr. Lamar Jackson. Brock Purdy. I guess Justin Fields. He mentions the Steelers. And Dak Prescott. So like, yeah, it's a list. And by the way, what do all of those teams also have in common? Some level of contention.
Almost every team has a level of contention right now NFL.
These are realistic playoff hopes for every team on that list.
I guess. Pittsburgh's in there too.
Yeah, they're 3-1.
Right. And Saints and Cowboys. They always seem to be at least 9-8.
Yeah, Saints, Cowboys, Ravens, Bills, Niners. Those are teams that are all...
And the Cowboys will take them off the list because I don't think that would happen.
I don't think it's happening, yeah.
And I don't even know if they're really a playoff contender based on your assessment of them being crappy.
I don't believe they are, but I'm sure they believe they are. I know they believe they are, and maybe Devontae does. But yeah,
Every team believes they are.
No,
outside of Miami with no quarterback, a winless Jacksonville, New England who has nothing really cooking.
Oh, the list is longer than that. The Giants know they're not going to the playoffs.
That's four teams. Yeah. Carolina's probably not with big-time designs on the playoffs. But
correct.
Other than that, I mean, even the Rams, I don't think they're ready to wave the white flag, even though they've got no receiver.
Not wave the white flag, but let's be, you know what I mean? Like,
I get it.
Realistically, the Titans and the Raiders and the Browns and the Bears and even the Cardinals and Rams, these teams know they're not winning the Super Bowl this year. They might sneak in. I don't even know if that's in their best interest, to be honest with you. You know, I don't think teams tank. But I do know that executives, once they know that you're not going to win the whole banana, do root for losses.
Yeah.
I know this for a fact.
For draft picks?
Yes.
Even if you have a quarterback, you'd rather have a higher pick.
Sure, of course. So anyway, that's not. And oh, one other note that Rap put out there, which is, remember yesterday we were kind of putting the over under on when this would happen. It hasn't hit warp speed yet, and now I'm paraphrasing, but he says he's not expecting things to intensify until early next week.
Yeah, and I think you put the over-under at next Wednesday.
It was either
next
Wednesday or Thursday.
I took the over either way.
You're probably right, but I do think next week is the week where things start boogieing. And
especially based on what happens this week, and a wide receiver will get hurt, you can probably safely predict, in the National Football League, and if it's a team that fancies itself as a real competitor and a team that, you know, can't afford to lose a receiver. I don't want to name names and jinx any player, but if you're a team that has a couple of good receivers and you lose one, you'd be more interested all of a sudden.
By the way, speaking of what you're interested in too, here's the other aspect of all of this that I'm really interested in, and I'm going to be upfront here. We will never know this. But gosh, if I could be president for a day and make anyone say anything, I would go straight to Kyle Shanahan and go, come on, dog. How are you really feeling about this? How are you really feeling about this player?
About Ayuk or about Devontae?
Ayuk.
Yep.
Shoot me straight and tell me how you are feeling about the hold-in, about the red shorts, about the way he's played, about the entire contract standoff. Even go back further in history to all of the bad and the good. Phenomenal player. Great output last year. 2 years ago, doghouse. You know what I mean? Like, what are you really, like, are you mildly annoyed? Are you not annoyed at all? Are you at the end of your rope? Like, how would you, I would love to know that. Because to me, that would actually shape how all of us feel about the whole wide receiver situation with the San Francisco 49ers.
I would hope that he is at worst mildly annoyed, because if he's any more annoyed than that, if he's at the end of his rope, then what the heck were you guys doing giving him a long-term deal?
Because fair question.
This didn't come out of nowhere. It's not like him wearing red shorts was the first thing that he did that would be annoying. And you saw the behavior in the offseason with poop emojis and TikToks, and they say they don't want me, and a hold-in. And a hold-in that was clearly immature in many ways. And you go back to Handshake Gate, where he goes across the field and he shakes hands with John, and he shakes hands with Kyle.
Dab him up.
He does that in front of everybody, and he did that intentionally. And then he wears red shorts on purpose. These are all things that, if they are more than a nothing burger, well, then what the hell were you doing signing this guy to a long-term deal? Would be the question that I would have.
I asked that a question in two ways. I agree with your question. I got another one. What are you doing signing him to that kind of deal if you're not going to run more plays for him? Why?
Well, you don't have to do it in the first 4 weeks.
No.
And they are running plays for him. Target-wise, he's on pace for last year.
Well, okay.
And I don't think that you can look at four games and say they're clearly not using him.
I wouldn't say that. But again, going back to the conversation we had with TJ a couple of weeks ago, he certainly pitched it in a way that I've never really heard before. And that's an NFL wide receiver. That's a guy who was in these huddles and in these game plan meetings. And he's like, dude, when you've got a guy like that who's that talented and you want to pay him, the offense needs to run through him. Now, that's his opinion, and it's a biased one. There's no question. But at the same time, that's the mindset of a wide receiver. And here's one thing I can promise our audience who sits there and listens to a conversation like that and goes, oh my gosh, well, TJ's biased. Don't look at it that way. It doesn't matter that TJ's biased. Here's what's interesting about the conversation. If that's how TJ's thinking, guess who else is thinking that way? Brandon. Brandon is. So if TJ's sitting there telling you, dog, you got to be giving him more targets. You paid him $30 million. Now it's time to validate that deal. If TJ thinks that, in my opinion, so does Brandon. So does Brandon. And so we're only 4 weeks in, but are the seeds of more frustration in the future being planted? And has that got anything to do with red shorts and
it could
hold ins and all of these things.
It very well could. And, you know, the counterpoint to that is, well, you want more targets, you want more stuff run for you, then come to camp and come in shape, and then we can play you more. And when we play you more, you have a greater chance of being targeted, because he came in and was unable to play a full rack of plays in the first couple of games because he didn't have camp. And so now he has a chance to play more because he's in shape, and theoretically he'll get more targets. And yeah, I just disagree with TJ when it comes to targets. And the big one was after the Ram game when Juwan Jennings went off and Brandon Ayuk had 10 targets in that game. So is 10 targets not enough in a football game? And Brandon had 5 catches on 10 targets and 48 yards. So I don't know what we're talking about here.
No, in this offense, 10 is totally
massive. Yeah,
it's acceptable. And didn't you say it was actually like 12 because
there were two plays that didn't count. Yeah.
Yeah, by penalty.
So he had two other plays that actually were going to go his way, intended targets.
12 targets in this offense is plenty. 5 targets is a little sparse. It's a little sparse.
Yep. Now, but I mean, how many throws did you have last week against New England?
So, well, it was more about completions. Brock had a way lower completion percentage than he normally does in that game. I forget how many pass attempts, but he only had 15 completions.
27 attempts.
Okay.
So 27 throws.
15 to 27. That's a low percentage for Brock.
Right. And he got, what, 5 targets of the 27?
Yeah.
Which is about a fifth. And
when you look around at who you're throwing to, that's a little low considering the money that you just gave him and what else is out there.
But if you go back to last year and he got 105 targets, I would bet that that's about a fifth of the targets that were available for everyone else. So this offense, and this is where I push back at the idea of giving any wide receiver $30 million, because the offense is not built on you're our guy. Even McCaffrey, when he's healthy, he doesn't get a lion's share of... He gets a lot of the carries, but targets-wise last year, they were pretty evenly distributed between Debo and George, Christian and Brandon. That's the way it works when you're on Kyle Shanahan's team.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, we will add sort of like the factual side of this, because part of it is it's speculative, it's fun to think about, and I don't think it's completely out of the question, but it is highly unlikely, and it's been written about. When you sign a player to that kind of a contract, if you were then going to trade him 4 games later, there is a very, very significant cap hit that immediately goes into play. And so, I for multiple reasons, there's a lot more reasons that this doesn't make sense than it does, but that's why I go back to the question I'd love to ask. Like, what are you really feeling right now, Kyle? What are you really feeling? Is there buyer's remorse? And actually, that'd be a question to throw out to all of you. 888-957-9570. I sat here without my partner. I was all by my lonesome.
Yeah.
When this news broke. And I said what I said, but we had a stream of calls. And I don't know if we took one that was like, boy, that was dumb. Nobody said that. Well, now we've watched 4 football games. Anybody? Anybody feeling Brandon Ayuk buyer's remorse 4 games later? You feeling any buyer's remorse?
I felt buyer's remorse at the time. Yeah, I thought that they should have traded him before the draft. And then I thought that they were going to trade him as he was holding in July and August. And I remember when the news broke, and it might have been on my birthday because I was off and taking my daughter to her first day of preschool. And so I took the day to be a good dad, and I was listening to you guys. I actually called in, as I recall.
You
were with Grandy.
You did.
And, you know, you had the news of the contract. And, you know, even then, I thought that it was an overpay. And forget the fact that he's off to a slow start. He's a good player. But now you're paying a guy $30 million. And I'm looking at the video again of him peeling off the red shorts and trying to kick him. Frustratingly trying to kick him away. Then he grabs the black pair and puts those on. And just you think about that for the next 4 years. How many more of these annoyances are we going to have?
Yeah, I don't know. I think after the game, or maybe this was actually before the game against the Patriots, was talking about how they've played a lot of zone coverage in the last couple of weeks. 49ers, just to get a little X's and O's here, they played against a lot of zone coverage in the first couple of weeks in the season. And usually when it's zone, there's not many people around the guys. This is his quote. There's just people underneath. So it's about throwing over people. He's done a good job in man coverage too. That's his quote from September 25th. Well, Brock spoke this week about the idea of he thinks there both has been a lot more man coverage recently, and he thinks that it's going to be more that way going forward. Go back to the Super Bowl. Steve Spagnuolo, defensive coordinator of the Chiefs, started in his zone and then reportedly went over to other coaches on the sideline and went, this Purdy kid's going to pick us apart. He's killing the zone. We got to go man. That slowed the faucet. Chiefs win the Super Bowl. I do think you're going to see a lot of that. And that does make it a little bit more interesting for the way we view Brandon Ayuk, which is much more, I think, of a zone killer, somebody who's smart, good route runner, can run well after the catch. But he's not Devontae, A.J. Brown, Justin Jefferson type win battles in, you know, up against one-on-one coverage type of a situation. So, we're going to see both of Brock and Brandon. We're going to see that skill set here in the weeks to come, according to Brock.
Right, and we did get the sound from Greg Cosell before the season about the things that Brandon Ayuk does so well, which is route running and short area quickness and all the rest of it. So I do think that Brandon Ayuk can be a legitimate man beater in this offense if teams want to come up and try to take him away in a man-to-man scheme. I don't think that hurts Ayuk. One thing that Brock said today, I was listening to his comments when he spoke after practice, was about, you know, he having to just be a little bit more accurate when it's man-to-man. The receiver has to win in his route, and Brock has to deliver a more accurate ball as opposed to zone. When a guy sits down in the zone, you have a little bit more of a margin for error.
Brock's literally always going to do that. All the players are going to do that. They're always going to put it on themselves if they're good teammates. Did you hear the mic'd up thing? Remember the Debo over the top, the long pass to Debo in the game against the Patriots?
Yeah.
Did you hear the mic'd up moment of when,
no.
when Brock got to Debo? Do you want to know what he said to him? Did you feel like that was a good throw? No. I'm asking you now. Did you feel like that was a good throw?
I would give it probably a 95 out of 100.
Okay.
It was a pretty damn good throw.
Yeah. It dropped him in the bucket.
Yeah.
He gets to Debo. You want to know what he says to him?
My bad.
Dude, should have led you. That was a touchdown.
It was a shade behind him.
I mean, like, literally feels, I mean, maybe missed it by half a yard.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But you want, if you're going to miss a half yard short, so he still catches it, as opposed to a half yard too long, right?
Yeah, and half a yard's about right. And I'm looking at the notes here. New England had just scored. So the opening kick, Garendo staggers into Saubert, right, and fumbles. Right. And it's like, oh, Schmidt, are you kidding me? And then five plays later, it's 20-10. And you're thinking, wait, we have a ball game? This is supposed to be Ottoman City. Niners touchback, first play, 21 personnel, Debo just runs that deep post route, runs by everybody, and Brock, I thought it was a beautiful throw.
It's a great throw.
Probably a 9.5 out of 10.
And he apologized for it.
And he apologizes.
Yep.
55-yard pass play. And he's right, though. If he puts it another 3 feet, half a yard, whatever, in front of him, it's a catch and a 70-yard touchdown.
Maybe.
Instead, Debo had to slow down just a fraction, but the throw was cash money.
Campbell in the city on with us on Willard and Dibs. Hi, Campbell. Thanks for calling.
What's up, guys? Love the show. First time caller.
Thanks, Campbell.
You know, I don't have Ayuk buyer's remorse. I love him. I love the way he played last year. I think he's going to play his way into shape. But I do feel like there's a bit of a weird taste in my mouth from the hold-in. And, you know, reflecting on some of the discourse on whether we should sign him or not, you know, we were discussing about how Debo wouldn't have the same numbers without Ayuk. Purdy looks better because of Ayuk. I think those things are true, but I think that there's no doubt that, like, our strongest weapons are also, you know, tied to Debo and Brock and McCaffrey. And, you know, I'm also just thinking now that Dewan's having such a killer year. I mean, is he already thinking about holding out next year for a new contract? Is he, you know, what happens with that?
Juwan?
No, yeah. Or Ayuk, either one.
Well, Ayuk can't.
I mean.
Yeah, he got his deal. Juwan Jennings just signed a new two-year contract right before this year. So is he going to outplay it and hold out? I'd be surprised. He just signed it, you know? Campbell, thanks. That's one of those things, and I'm not going to act like I know these guys, but Juwan Jennings literally signed this deal, what, like 7 weeks ago?
Something like that. It was earlier in the offseason, I think, but yeah.
Was it? Anyway, so like he just signed it. I think that he has handled himself like the ultimate team player. There are two quotes that I love. One of them was a non-quote. You know, he said this week, I always tell Brock, whatever you need from 15, 15 is ready. I don't care how many catches I get. I don't care what I do. I just want us to win football games. Combine that with the fact that he goes for 179 yards and 3 touchdowns in L.A., but they lose the game and he won't talk to the media.
Right.
His most famous day in the history of his life. And he's like, I'm not even talking. I loved that. I loved that. So to me, that's an example of what some of these guys do and how they think. I don't think they're all sitting here counting each other's money and getting jealous about it. The more the next wide receiver makes, that's better for every wide receiver out there.
Absolutely. But if you're Juwan Jennings and you see your contract, which was 2 years and $15 million, and you've got, I see, $5.6 due in April of next year, you probably want more. I mean, you'd like to get your deal reworked because if he has the year like he's had so far and he's only making, he's only making 7.9 or 5.6 or whatever, the cap hit next year is not big. So I would love to get more money if I was Juwan in the last year of his deal.
By the way, you're right. My bad. It was signed all the way back at the very, very end of May.
Yeah.
Okay. But it was this offseason.
Yeah, it was kind of a quiet one. And it was like, oh, that's cool. Because we had been talking about Juwan maybe being a free agent.
Yeah,
and
we thought we might lose him.
Well, and we thought that they had drafted those guys with a thought. I did anyway. Like, you drafted a couple receivers. You're going to let Juwan go. And then you sign Juwan. It's like, okay, wide receiver room. Getting pretty full.
Well,
how are you going to get playing time for Ronnie Bell?
Not Ronnie Bell. But I still feel some level of confusion. And it's actually fun. It's like a reality show, you know. They're playing a game of receiver survivor.
Yep.
But I'm a little confused at what they're doing. Juwan Jennings gets a new deal. Brandon Ayuk gets a big new deal. Debo gets a restructure, which makes him less likely to be cut at the end of the year. And then you pop your first round draft pick on a receiver as well. So are you keeping everyone? And if you keep everyone, there are questions. There are questions if you do that.
Right. You're going to have a full room. Plus, you have Cowing as well, you know?
That's less of an issue. That's a later draft pick. And right. That's not a flyer, but a half flyer, fourth rounder. Real quick, let's go to Will in the East Bay. Hi, Will. What's going on?
Hey, Will. That was quick. I just walked in the door, was listening on the car radio, and I concur. My, wasn't that dumb? And we're talking you said everybody else was on the other side of the fence, and, you know, no one called in saying, my, wasn't that dumb that they signed Brandon? And
Got
I'm
it.
Saying, yes, it was.
Well, okay. Fair enough.
Damn, I'm sorry I had to clarify that.
That's all right.
Anyway, my point is, let me just support it real quick, okay? And I had called in months ago right after the draft, and pretty much the census was, you know, this kumbaya, no, Brandon's going to get his bag, and they'll work out a deal. And I called in, and I said, pump the brakes, okay? They drafted a receiver. And I think they did that with the intent that we'll go within certain, latitude or whatever, you know, but we're not going to go over the top. I think they had it figured out. What they didn't have figured out was that McCaffrey was going to be in the position he's in, injured, and that this young man was going to get shot in the city, okay? But the whole thing is I still believe that, and I believe it because it's always a next-man-up mentality in this league, no matter how good you are. And the Niners still have a wealth of talent on offense, no matter. And it's like next man up. Okay, you got a quarterback that's learning and getting better game to game. You got Jennings who's stepping up, you know. You got George who's just catching unbelievable passes. And they've got the goods to make a run. And that's why I said, you know, like you would say, what are you thinking of? Or wasn't that dumb to, you know, give them the double bag? So anyway, just my opinion.
Yeah, Will, I get it. And let's put it this way. It's a fair opinion, and there are scenarios over the next year that lead us to a spot where we're like, what are you doing, 49ers, with the line? I don't know how it'll play out, but it could play out that way. We'll take more of your phone calls as we move through the rest of the 5 o'clock hour coming up next here on Willard and Dibs.
This season of the WNBA has gone to new heights.
And that means the playoffs are going to be hotter than ever.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson.
And all WNBA season long, we've brought you analysis and interviews with some of your favorite court queens.
So for the finals, you know we're bringing takes you can only find in this courtroom.
Listen to and follow Queens of the Court, a WNBA podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.